This is the Stick and Hack Show. Conversation, discussion, debate, and golf talk from a stick, Mike Ryan, and the hack, Adam Grubb. Boys, you are up.
Welcome in to the Stick and Hack Show. I'm your host, Adam Grubb, the hack. That's your host, Mike Ryan. The stick, Mike, how are you?
I am fantastic.
Are you coming off? Yeah. You are coming off a victory.
We had a big win.
A big win, a big team win. Some sort of Ryder Cup style thing, and you and your team won. Yeah. You came from behind and you won, so you're high on life and you're excited to be here, right?
I am. It was fantastic.
Would you say this is going to be your best show ever because of your excitement?
Questionable.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
Questionable based on the amount of alcohol I've
based on the rest of the afternoon. All right, well, at least we all know what we're getting into here. Exciting day today. Josh Morris, editor of the GolfHistoryToday.com, is with us. He's going to be on the show in just a bit. He's a pseudo-golf historian, but he's just a lover of facts. He's a lover of golf, a student of golf, and he's got a website called GolfHistoryToday.com, which is just rich of trivia and what happened in golf this day, this year. And any lover of golf, Mike, you know, the history of the game, people love to know what happened. How did we get to today? And we're going to talk to him about that. Do you like the history of golf?
Yeah, I love it.
Well, it's cool. Today's your lucky day then.
Because Josh, it is. I do. I love hearing all this kind of like little tidbits about golf that you've never heard before.
Well, and there's so many stories. There's so many things that you're like, man, I had no, like, you know, things happen and you don't know where they started. You don't know anything like that. So it's going to be an exciting time. Josh Morris is going to be with us in just a little bit on the most sophisticated golf show in the free world. A reminder that we are in the middle of a membership drive. All right. So for our members of Stick and Hack, you can go, which by the way, is the greatest golf club in the free world without the course.
Absolutely.
And you go to stickandhack.com, you sign up to become a member, free for life, and you get stuff, and you get to be part of a community of like-minded people who are looking at the highs and lows of the game that we love, golf. And if you are a member, then you refer other members, and you win a TaylorMade Spider-X putter.
That's right.
Now, I said that it's one of the most used putters in the tour, but then I made that stat up. But it actually is one of the most.
Yeah, it's one of the more popular.
It's an incredible putter. So TaylorMade Spider-X putter for the most referrals for a membership drive at stickandhack.com. Make a memory and change your life. It won't change your game, but it'll change your life.
That's right.
I have so many slogans and taglines for this thing. I can't stop. I'm going to write that one down because that one I like.
Yeah, they never stop. For the folks out there in internet land, they never stop.
Yeah,
and like even after the show, this is what I listen to all the time. And I want to trademark
all of them. It costs us $200,000 to trademark every stupid slogan that I have. All right, so again, stickandhack.com to become a free member. First up here on the show, Bo Kim suspended. So Korean golfer Bo Kim received an astonishing 3-year ban from golf, from the Korean tour. Do you want to explain the story of our boy Bo Kim and what happened?
Well, during the event, there was a fan that I think that they...
His phone.
Yeah, their phone went off.
Yeah.
And he was not happy and made it known by giving that guy the bird.
he ripped. So pretend you're at your local municipal course.
Yeah.
Pretend you're at your local club. You're playing golf on Saturday. Your idiot friend has his phone on, and in the middle of the downswing, the phone goes off, and of course, all hell breaks loose here for Bo Kim. He shanks it to the right. It's a terrible shot, and he rips around, looks at the crowd, and flips him off. And then curses at him.
Yep.
And then he was banned for 3 years. Now, is that because it was the Korean tour? Or is that because he's a well-known golfer in that area? I mean, 3-year ban. There's people that are taking PEDs that are banned for 8 games.
Part of me thinks it has something to do with, like, Korean culture.
Right.
Maybe.
They don't put up with a whole lot.
No, but it feels egregious, I guess.
It's aggressive. Hey, Bo, come here, buddy.
I don't know. 3 years feels pretty rough.
We got good news and bad news. Good news, you're an internet sensation. Bad news is you can't play golf over here for 3 years.
Yeah.
And now the PGA Tour and some of his buddies are coming to his defense and saying, look, this is out of control.
Yeah.
But 3-year ban for golf for now, what he did was terrible, right?
Yeah, he wasn't correct. I mean, he should have been. Yeah, there should have been some sort of
fine.
Reprimand or fine or whatever. But Yeah, 3-year ban totally feels very aggressive to me.
And do you think his actions were warranted based upon what happened on the 16th hole? So I guess he was leading the tournament, mm-hmm. right? I mean, he was up there. He wasn't like day one. He was leading the tournament. It's his profession. And a phone went off, which they've now allowed phones in most of the tournaments, with the exception of Augusta and a couple others. Was his reaction warranted, at least as a human being, maybe not as a professional?
Yeah.
We've all lost our minds at work.
Yeah, I can't say I wouldn't have reacted the same way.
Right. Well, yeah. Yeah, and 3 years, so that's his livelihood. And they don't have a labor union to go to to even help him with his case. He's basically like, okay, it's me against Korea. It's not the best.
You almost said North Korea, didn't you?
Almost did. And then I forgot the total political climate we're in, so I stopped that.
You're gonna be getting some tweets from
good. Bring them on,
Kim Jong Un.
Good, bring them on. I'll ban him for 3 years. I don't care. It's a stick and axe show. All right. So second question here on the first up is: Top Golf good for the game?
I think it is. I really do. If nothing else, it gets people. It piques their interest. I think. I think there are a lot, the majority, and I've seen a stat from I don't know if I saw it on Top Golf's website or whatever, but I read it somewhere.
That's where I go for the truth. Yeah,
I read it somewhere. I'm sure it's true, but like something like 90% of their clientele are people that have never played golf before.
Yeah.
Or would not consider themselves golfers.
Right.
So in my opinion, that can only be good for golf, because if nothing else, if any sort of percentage of those people get interested in the game because of it, I think it's a good thing.
And it's low pressure. You go there, you know, you're not on a range with actual golfers. You're there just trying to figure it out. It's expensive, yes, but it's an entertaining, fun night. Or you know, you take your kids and you bring them, and you're like, hey, let's enjoy this. Try to hit those targets. It gamifies golf a little bit. But that's also every reason that it's great are the reasons that people say it's bad for the game. Those are the purists. Those are the those that probably don't have an open mind about how do we grow this game? How do we connect people to this game in a way that will get them started outside of, hey, let's go play golf and you can drive the cart,
right?
Which is how I'm currently trying to get my kids involved in the sport, is just and truthfully just letting them be out there and run around and just be part of the outdoors and be part of the course. This actually gets them there. They are not embarrassed because everyone there sucks.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
so it's good for the game.
Yeah. I really think it's one of those things that will bring more people into the game. I really do.
Yeah. And it's starting to.
Yeah.
But I think what golf in general has to figure out is how do you bridge the top golfer to a course to where, and here's the other thing about Top Golf. You have your Happy Gilmores out there. You have and I've seen them, the guys that are just out there trying to hit it as far as they can and do something silly and something stupid. And it will eventually ruin people, you know, going there because it's sophomoric. But there's that other side that's just like, hey, I'm just trying to enjoy my Friday night.
Yeah.
It's a good date spot too.
Yep.
So Top Golf, good for the game. You're fine with it.
Yep.
And do you think it will help grow the game? More, you think Top Golf will do more for the game of golf than Stick and Hack? And that's the question. That's the question everyone's asking.
That remains to be seen.
That's a new slogan.
We're gonna find that out.
Doing more for the game of golf than Top Golf.
We're gonna try.
We're Stick and Hack.
Well, we're gonna try and do more.
Damn right we are.
Yeah.
Speaking of, our boy Josh Morris is on the phone with us, editor of GolfHistoryToday.com. Josh Morris, hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, you're very welcome. So you're a pseudo golf historian. You're a lover of the game. You're a lover of stats and data and trivia. You know, I cautioned myself to call you a golf geek, but looking at GolfHistoryToday.com, that is your world. That is your life.
Definitely takes up a big chunk of my time, and definitely proud of where it is today. But it's just kind of been my baby over the last 5 years. I've been building a piece upon piece, writing story after story, and it's just, you know, digging up new things throughout golf history research is just like such an awesome experience, really, to have going on.
So what brought you, what do you do on your day job in your real life?
I'm actually, my family's business is a horticulture, agriculture background. And right now I'm kind of in the new cannabis, regulated cannabis market, right?
So it's taking everything in my body not to make about 100 jokes here, but I'm not going to do it. Okay. it's fine. So golfhistorytoday.com, your job is to bring those daily facts and the history of golf to people. What got you involved in it 5 years ago? What started this whole thing?
It was never supposed to be what it was today. Really, if I had to pinpoint it, it was just probably a conversation with my grandfather. Yeah. He was telling me about his childhood, and he told me a story about a PGA professional named Johnny Weitzel. He was a PGA pro at Hershey Country Club in Pennsylvania. And unfortunately, he got killed. He was killed in a car accident on the way home from a tournament. And his widow ended up taking care and partly raising my grandfather. And he was always in debt to their family and always held her in such high regard. And after that, I remember going home and researching the whole thing and being absolutely fascinating what I was finding and some of the people, especially from Hershey Country Club that I was talking to. So that was definitely the start of the journey, and it hasn't slowed down since.
That's really cool. Awesome. So your job has a lot to do with the history of the game, but also the unknown, the stories behind. So just like that story there, nobody knows that one action could create that ripple effect for other things and then affect your life as it has today. What are some of the things that you, when you look at what you're doing with Golf History Today, that fascinates you still looking back at the history of golf?
Well, I think during the most simple things, just going through old archives or newspapers, and most of the times you're finding things, screenshotting things that you were never intending to dig up, and it ends up blowing your mind, really. So that's probably one of the most rewarding things about it. And then not a lot of people know this, but there's like an excellent online community of golf historians that are constantly debating and discussing different topics of golf history.
What do you see as the starting and for most people, that one thing, that one fact, that one deal where they're like, I had no idea, I got to dig into this. Is that typically a major, major history? Is it golf history and golf lore? Is it something about Sam Snead or, one of the most prolific professional golfers of our time? Where do you see people getting really excited about the history of golf?
I think it is really based upon when you grew up. Every kid my age absolutely goes nuts about Tiger Woods. I mean,
right.
Myself, I was crying like a baby when he won the Masters last April.
You're not going to find anybody with 100 yards of this place that wasn't crying. So yeah, we get it.
And I'm sure the same goes for the generations before mine. They looked up to Arnie and Jack Nicklaus. I mean, everyone had their own driver of their love for the game.
Yeah. Josh, is there a moment when you would say we started to see golf come into the mainstream? Do you think it was it when Jack and Arnie were starting to become popular, or was it more when Tiger came into popularity? When would you say that we've started to see golf become more into the mainstream? Because for a long time it was just really like kind of the game for the upper class, and I feel like it's become more of a mainstream thing probably in the last 30 years.
Definitely. There's been a bunch of personalities throughout the years that have been able to make golf mainstream. I mean, I, as a, lover of the facts, golf historian, I like looking back at Walter Hagen, Gene Sarazen, Bobby Jones. They made it popular in the 1920s and 30s during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
That's just like you noted, it wasn't really a game for everyone then.
Right.
But then there's Arnold Palmer that came around. And I think he came in, Arnie, Jack, Gary Player, they came at a perfect time when golf was just starting to be televised on a regular basis. And it started expanding. The coverage started expanding. And
yeah.
Arnold Palmer himself, he was lovable. He had the blue collar work ethic, handsome features, and he just showed up at a perfect time for golf history.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's something that people probably don't, especially are a little bit younger than us, in our late 30s, early 40s, there's that other, just as you alluded to, that other group of people that are older than us, and that's their Jack is our Tiger, right? And
exactly.
They had the same feelings and the same emotions. Yeah. But then what I don't think about are the people even older, right? Yeah. And in their 70s or 80s, because who they looked up to, I mean, you look back in the history of golf, those were the dudes. I mean, they changed the face of golf. They brought the popularity, and they brought a suave sophistication to the game unknown to most of the time. And those are the guys that you talked about.
Yeah.
Who do you
True.
Like?
And that, yeah, definitely. And that was hard work for him too, because everyone's flying around on airplanes and jets now. They were doing hard travel. If they needed to play in the Open Championship over in Scotland, they were taking a boat. It was hard travel and very demanding.
I didn't even think, we don't even think about that. We think of Phil getting in his Gulfstream and jetting around the country.
Yeah. Exactly.
So do you think that at the time, because obviously the golf purses weren't as much as they were, even with inflation, doesn't matter. I mean, they didn't make a lot of money. They did it then. They were professional athletes, just like any other sport in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, where money wasn't the driver. They did it because they loved the sport. They loved and they had the passion for it. Do you see that same passion today that historians say we're back there in those times?
I think it still exists. I think the passion's still there. I mean, there's, plenty of examples of, people making their connections to golf history, but the money is, it helps. I mean, that's what all the pros will tell you. The money definitely helps. And, they definitely have it easier today with the equipment, the purses, the course setups, the greens. They have it easy today, and that's what makes it so much more astonishing and so easier to admire these giants of golf history.
That's what's so that's what's so interesting to me about, if you look back at like a guy like Bobby Jones, that he was playing most of his golf as what was considered to be an amateur, which was, it's like unheard of now. And on top of the fact that golf wasn't his main vocation, right?
Right.
No.
So he was a lawyer.
Yep.
So it's like, it was so crazy to think about, like back then he's going out and playing these huge tournaments, but they didn't have, they didn't have the circuit like you do today with the tour and all of that. It was all very kind of like hodgepodge the way they put together a lot of the events.
And they just played they just had the majors basically, right? And a couple other events that were local.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of exhibition matches dominated. You'd have some of the British stars or the, the Scotland stars come over to the United States to try to help, spark the popularity into golf.
Yep.
So you'd have, a big name like Harry Vardon or someone come over to the United States and play Bobby Jones in an exhibition match and, try to raise the popularity.
Yep.
Well, can you imagine what happens with that at this stage in the game? If I mean, that's what they tried to do with Tiger and Phil, and that was an absolute disaster. and in 50 years, well, the golf historians are going to say
that those sponsors might say otherwise.
Well, good.
I think they made a lot of money on that.
They did. Well, they owe me $21. so those exhibition matches at the time, that was pretty exciting. So let me ask you this then, with golf in general, is there something that you see as a stat or a historical piece of data that you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I found this. I can't believe I discovered this.
Definitely. I've definitely come across a lot of things like that, but one that stuck with me for a while it happened in 1988 at the Standard Registered Turquoise Classic qualifying grounds. This is a qualifying round for LPGA event back in 88, and a lady named Mary B. Porter, known by Mary B. Porter King now. She works for the USGA. She teed off on the fourth hole, wayward drive over to the right. The hole was lined with houses. Her ball was near a fence line. And when she walked up to the fence, she noticed a man frantically running and diving into a body of water, a small pool. And she gleamed over the fence and she saw that a child was lying face down in the water. And it was the man's son. And this is mid round. She is in the middle of a round. Her caddy helps her pop over to the fence. She helps revive the child. She basically revives the child, resuscitates him. The child's crying, doesn't know what happened to him. She hops back over to the fence and she had 15 more holes to play. She saved a little kid's life. And then she had to finish the tournament. And
that's
you know, it's pretty, that'd be pretty tough to finish your 15 holes. She ended up not qualifying until there's a protest by some of the winners that eventually got her into the tournament.
Wow. That's so they came to her defense and they said, look, this is what she did. She saved a kid's life. Let her continue in the tournament.
Yeah. They ended up doing the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
Wow. That is quite a story. Now, do you, when you find something like that, how quickly do you need to research more, delve into it, find your secondary facts and those that are corroborating the story and then get it online? What's your process once you discover a story like that or some sort of golf history that you know not only your audience but anybody is going to want to hear?
Well, I like doing it's you know giving it its due diligence. I like finding out where the people are today. I mean, Mary B. Porter King, she's had a successful career in golf with the USGA. My process is newspaper archives, digging up page after page after page, and that's where I found that one, and it was pretty, it was pretty amazing to find. I mean, I bet you guys have never heard that before.
No, never.
No, that's definitely obscure. Yeah, sure. That's wild though.
And I can see you in the library then looking through the microfilm of these old newspapers, like an old reporter. That's just a cool visual, thinking that you're uncovering and discovering these things, and not just by Googling golf history and then putting it on your deal. You're going out and you're investigating and reporting some of the stuff yourself.
No, I've been caught too many times. I've got over 500 stories on golf history today. There's been too many times where I haven't done the due diligence, and then there's a golf historian coming around telling me, no, this guy had a bogey on this par 5 in 1895.
Yeah.
So,
that's wild.
Yeah. So you have to be exact because people are going to pick you, and you have to really do your due diligence, look everything up, couple sources.
Yeah, Josh, one of the things I know we want to talk about as well is, when you think about golf history, the Masters is like, the granddaddy of them all. When did some of the traditions of the Masters start? Just thinking about, some of the honorary starters and some of that stuff. There's so many traditions around the Masters. Can you tell us a little bit about, some of that history around the Masters and when some of that stuff started?
Sure. Plenty of traditions around Augusta National. That's no stranger to anyone. Mostly the honorary starters. That started back in the early 60s, 1963. Jock Hutchinson had those first duties of driving the first ball. And many other greats of the game held that position. Gene Saracen, Byron Nelson, Ken Venturi. They were all the honorary starters until we kind of saw a more formalized Arnold Palmer, the big three, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, until Palmer retired from that role in 2016.
Yeah.
But we still have, unfortunately, passed away as well.
Right.
But we still have Nicklaus and Player doing it.
So do you see that in 20 years, 25 years? I mean, are we going to see Tiger and those guys up there? Do you think that's a tradition that's going to live on? Even because after these guys, I don't know who's behind that as far as iconic golfers that could take that on. I mean,
one of the things I was thinking about earlier is like who takes over for them. Yeah.
I know Tom Watson. He's hopped into the mix.
Colin Montgomery.
The next wave. It's that's hard to say.
No. I mean, Colin Montgomery will not be one.
I'm going to start a petition for Colin Montgomery to be an honorary starter.
I'm going to start a counter petition against you.
See who wins. See who has more clout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Josh. We had a sidebar there. We had an idea that it's fizzled out.
Okay. No problem there. He says
okay.
Yeah.
Montgomery didn't fizzle out once again.
No.
All right. So what about the kids on the course, the par three, the all white caddy uniforms? There's, you know, when you think about the Masters in Augusta, every single year, everything is the same, and it's crazy. There's really nothing new there. How long, and your knowledge of the Masters might be limited, I know, but when Bobby Jones and those guys started this tournament, where did it change from a tournament that was important to the Masters?
Well, that's a very good question, because it's always had a level of prestige to it. And the players will tell you, some of the traditions like skipping the ball over the water, that kind of stuff, that would never happen when the creators, Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts, when they're alive, because everyone was so damn afraid of them. So there's some, right. They've gotten a little looser in their traditions, but it's always been a really prestigious event. It's been the United States where a lot of the top golfers have been, while it's since its inception in the mid-1930s. So it's always been like a big focal point, one of the biggest tournaments every single year. It's the tournament. It's the place, Augusta National. That's what you think of, I mean, other than St. Andrews, maybe, when you think of golf and golf history.
Yeah.
You know, what is a challenge to me in my own head is just how long golf has really been around. You know, I mean, it's been around a long, long time. And
yeah, that's debatable too. I mean, the historians talk about the origins and when the exact year it started all the time, to be determined still.
But I've seen things that it was started in the 1600s. I've seen things that, you know, started that the golf as we know it today was more like in the 1850, 1860 range.
Yeah.
But it's funny to debate when something started, because you think you would just know when it started. But apparently the game as we know it today was much different in the 1600s because of the way that what they had to use. But golf has been around for a long time. And you brought up a good point with the Open, St. Andrews. That's pretty much the birthplace of golf for most people. Have you ever had a chance to be there? Have you ever traveled to some of these areas and been part of the history of the sport that you love?
I've never been to Scotland. It's on the bucket list here shortly.
Same here.
Yep.
But definitely want to scoot around there and visit all the Open Championships venues. But I've been volunteering for the USGA the last few years, so I've been able to go to the last couple of US Opens. And then when the PGA Championship was just in St. Louis, I was able to, that was my hometown, so I was able to go nice. To that one too.
Awesome.
So
Bell Reef.
It's been, it's been cool to, you know, be a part of the, you know, around the history. I've got a cool stat going for me too. With all the majors I've been to, I've only been to three, and Koepka's won every single one. Aaron Hills, Hancock awesome. Hills, Bell Reef. Koepka's won every single one. So
yeah.
I don't know. My people need to,
I think he needs to pay. To yeah. Together. He needs to like give you some sort of an appearance fee. If he's winning every time you're there.
Yeah, I think that's
that seems fair. Yeah, it seems fair.
Why not?
Yeah. All right, we'll make that happen. We'll make one email and that'll be done. All right? Don't you worry about that, buddy. All right, you talked about Bobby Jones and the Masters earlier. How influential was Bobby Jones to the game of golf outside of creating the greatest tournament of all time?
Well, we already hit on it a little bit with the exhibition matches he was playing. He was constantly running raising money for the war effort. He was raising the popularity constantly. He was doing it as an amateur. He was just, you know, the model of tradition, respect, sportsmanship. You always hear great stories of Bobby Jones and his famous sportsmanship. But he was the first golfer to get a ticker tape parade after he won the, you know, capped off the Grand Slam in 1930. He was the first one to win the Grand Slam. I don't care how you slice it, but he's the first guy to, reach some major milestones. And, he really paved the way for a lot of the golfers after him.
What about Sam Snead? Do you know much about him? So I'll tell you a quick story. I played Oakmont. I had the pleasure and the privilege of playing Oakmont one time. Yeah. And their locker room is as much as it was back in the day, right? They still had the benches with spike marks, the metal spike marks on them. And, you know, who knows if this is true or not. But one of the guys at the clubhouse attendant's like, hey, where your locker is, right there is where Sam Snead put on his shoes. Those are his spike marks. And you know, Johnny Miller shot a 59 or whatever the hell he was in the Open. Yeah. And so his card's up. There's all this history at that course. And that's the way it is at a lot of those cool courses. But to hear that Sam Snead, who I don't know a bunch about, but to hear that someone of that ilk was there and put his shoes on that bench that is still there today was chilling. It was really, really cool, whether you're a golf fanatic or just a fan of the game. Josh, have you had a moment like that before?
Yeah, probably. Moments like that give you chills. Yeah. And, it was probably being out at Shinnecock Hills the first time. That was the moment where, you know all the history that this has been a major championship venue for 100 years. I mean, you know, there's a history upon history upon historical event that has happened there. So it gives you the chills right away. And I mean, it kind of, you kind of sit there and kind of like what Tom Watson said to Jack Nicklaus, this is what it's all about.
Right.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely what it's all about. Yeah,
absolutely. Josh, what do you think people are going to say about the game today in 50 years from now? What do you think people are going to be saying?
To be honest, I think we're going to still be talking about Tiger's dominance in 50 years.
Yeah, I agree.
We're still talking about it 20 years later. I guess it'll be 70 years by then. Yeah. I don't know. He's a once in a century talent. So I think we may still be talking about Tiger.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how they don't, in 50 years that what he's done for the game and what he's done for golfers across the world, what he's done for professional golf is just as far as getting people there and the purses and the sponsorships and everything, pretty much what Jordan did for basketball and NBA back in the day, as far as endorsements and the shoe line and then bringing the business of golf, a business of NBA and basketball to him. Tiger's done the same thing with his foundations, with the business at hand of not just being a golfer, but being a business person, a professional, and elevating a game to a level that I don't think we would be at if it wasn't for him. And that's obviously a debatable topic. But, I mean, Josh, you think the same thing, that's Tiger all day for the next 50 years?
Yeah, he's a larger-than-life personality. I mean, people still get giddy. I mean, if you want to go back to when I first got the chills on the golf course, it was probably seeing him in person the first time.
Yeah.
Actually, in his element. You're like, that's what I've been watching on TV all these years. Yeah. He's real. It's not... He seems like a robot. No, he's real. He's a real guy.
Yeah.
The one thing about that topic, however, is that, everyone is in love with Arnie, in love with Jack, in love with these guys today, but at in their prime, do you think there were haters? Were there Jack haters? Were there Arnie haters? I mean, there's Tiger haters, right? There's no doubt about it.
Sure.
You're either a Tiger fan and a fanatic, or you can't stand him. And you don't want to watch him, and you don't want him to win. Did Jack, Arnie, any of those guys, did they have that type of hate back in the day?
I don't know if hate is the word for it, but there was definitely some, fierce rivalries between those guys. I mean, Arnie had his whole army. I mean, he had some ferocious crowds following him. Yeah. There's a famous story of when they were playing in Pennsylvania, so that's Arnie's home state, and it was hard for Nicklaus to play peacefully. He was constantly getting badgered by the army. He was constantly getting heckled by the crowd. I mean, he had so much support, so there's definitely some animosity there. So it definitely existed.
I think that's interesting, because you go back to think about what we talked about a little bit earlier about golf becoming mainstream, and for me, thinking back about Jack and Arnie, I think part of what they helped bring golf into the mainstream was the fact that they had a rivalry, and you didn't really have that before in golf. And the fact that Arnie was kind of like that everyman rep, coming from Pennsylvania, from Steel Country, all of that. That was one of the things that I've always thought is fascinating, is especially between Jack and Arnie, is that that kind of is what I think started to spark the kind of outside of just the golf being for rich people. I think that that's one of the things that I always think about that I think is amazing.
Definitely. So, to have two titans of the game going head to head like that all the time, that is, that's great for the game. And then it kind of flipped the script when Tiger came about. It was Tiger versus all.
Yeah.
Tiger versus everyone. Yep. It's,
absolutely.
They were playing, the joke was, we're playing for second place.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were.
Oh, I always felt the same way. Yeah. You know, they tried to, I've always felt the Phil Tiger thing was kind of always, they were trying to push that for
Tiger, this era.
But when Tiger played his best, there was nobody going to beat him, period. Mm. I don't care what anybody says. When
Rocco
played,
mediate.
Tiger that turn out? With a broken leg. With a broken leg. And C still can beat him. So,
sorry, Rocco.
Tough, I love Rocco Mediate. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, I knew he was going to make that. Yeah. That's one of my all-time favorite lines, outside of Sal Hutton, Hal Sutton, rather. Sal Hutton. It's his neighbor.
Oh, my God.
Hal Sutton. The other favorite line is when Rocco Mediate said, when Tiger hit that putt to force the playoff, and he said, I knew he was going to make that.
Yeah.
It's just, like, that's how we all feel.
Well, yeah.
Right?
Rocco was like a fan at that point.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, he's playing against the guy, and he's just like, that's incredible.
he didn't even care that he was in a playoff the next day. Josh, if you could, and I'm going to put you on the spot here. This was not part of the prearranged questions from producer Shane. If you could play golf with anybody today, dead or alive, not Tiger, not Jack, not Arnie, who do you pick?
Wow.
Yeah. We'll wait.
That's a tough question. I probably got a lot. You know, just one guy, though?
One dude. And you got him for an afternoon, 18 holes, anywhere you want.
I guess it'd just be it'd have to be Bobby Jones, then.
Yes. I love it. Yeah, I like that.
Good answer.
I'd be in for that.
I've got close seconds. I mean, I'd love an afternoon with some of the people we don't have anymore, like Payne Stewart, something like that. But, you know, I'd have to settle with Bobby Jones.
Yeah, that's good. I want Nick Price.
Nick Price. That's a good one.
Thank you, Josh. That's terrible, Josh. Nick Price.
And Stick. Get out of here. I just got a note on that Korean tour story about the 3-year ban.
Yeah. We got an update. Yeah. We got a live update here. Stick and Axe Show.
The rumor was that was handed down from Kim Jong-un's office directly. So, this is the same guy who...
They're coming after you.
That's the same guy who put out a hit on his own brother-in-law and had him assassinated. Well,
that's right.
So this guy got off pretty easy with 3 years.
I guess so. And I think I might have challenged him earlier in the show.
You better watch it. Watch it, Adam.
This might be the last Stick and Axe show ever.
The last Stick and Axe show we're going to have.
It's going to be you and Josh moving forward.
Exactly.
Hey, his name is Josh Morris. He's the editor of GolfHistoryToday.com. Josh, a pleasure having you on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
Same here, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, good luck in the rest of it. Go to GolfHistoryToday.com for more golf history on a daily basis. Josh, have a good one. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Stick Hack. Thank you.
Thank you, baby. All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, Josh.
Bye. All right, we're into the clubhouse now. This is the Hack Rule Etiquette question for you, Stick. What do you think of the I can only take a fill-in-the-blank person? So he's golfing.
So max score.
Max score.
Talking about a max score.
So he's in the bushes. She's in the water.
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be. And then they're like, I can only take this. So just mark me down for that, and I'll be in the cart listening or checking my email.
I'm okay with it. I actually think it serves a very good purpose.
You do?
I do.
As a competitor,
yes.
That's shocking to me.
The purpose of it is to prevent sandbagging.
The reverse sandbag.
No. Sandbag.
Okay. The real sandbag.
Yeah, real
so
sandbag.
So if they get a nine.
You're a two handicap.
Right.
Right?
Or let's just sit and think about that for a second.
Okay, let's be more realistic. You're a 10 handicap.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And you're going out there and, you know, you might have a bad round. You may have a bad hole, or, you know, maybe you're out of a hole in a match that you've got going on. So instead of allowing people to kind of mail it in and be able to post a 10, you say, well, if you're at this, if you've made it to this level of handicap, right, you're not typically going to have a lot of these like blow up holes.
Right.
So that's the purpose of it, is to say, once you get certain handicap level, all right, you're only going to be able to post a double bogey.
Okay.
So like for me, I can never, I, even when I post a score, if I have a blow up hole, I the most I can post is a double.
And that's to prevent your score to be high and your handicap to be inflated. And then you go out after the revision and you have a higher handicap and you get an extra stroke because you had one bad hole or two bad holes.
Exactly.
Well, see, that makes sense. To me, it was more of that kind of bravado mentality that I was talking about that annoys me. Like, I'm normally really good.
No.
Just not the last three holes.
And that's the thing, is it's really tied to your handicap. So if there's somebody that is a higher handicap that's saying that, then yes, what your point is very valid.
Right.
But your handicap needs to be real, and that's the whole point of it.
I think that takes us to another point, that if you are any type of golfer and you're just wanting to know where you stand in the game, get a handicap. You can get them online. You can go to any course really that has the software, and you, that's $30 a year or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
And just keep track of it. And it helps you, also gives you an idea of where you're at consistently with your game. And when people say, are you a good golfer or not, are you a stick or you hack, you have actual proof.
That's right.
You can tell them, correct?
Exactly.
All right. Good show, Mike. What'd you think of our boy?
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was great. Go check his site out.
Yeah. His name's Josh, golfhistorytoday.com. I'm sure there's fascinating stories there, and we could probably spend an entire show just hearing those stories.
I think we just did.
Right. Good point. I guess we don't have to, do we? We just went through it. Yeah, it's good to have you here, Mike.
I try.
Stickandhack.com. Get a different perspective on the stories of golf that you love, including Diary of a Hack, as well as the thoughts of a madman golfer. Sign up for free membership, get free stuff, and become a member of the greatest golf club in the world, Mike.
I know. Go out there. What are you waiting for?
Yeah, what are you
doing?
It's
free.
And
we send you stuff.
Yeah, we send you stuff. I mean, you get free stuff.
Yeah.
TaylorMade Spider-X putter as well. Given away if you want it. Got to go to stickandhack.com and become a member. Mike, have a great week.
You too, man.
Thanks, guys. So I'll talk to you later.
All right. Peace out.
All right. Bye.
The Stick and Hack Show is now over. Subscribe, rate, comment, and tell your friends. You are now free to go about your day.